4-2, and the White Sox and the Cleveland Guardians postponed because of weather. Today, the Brewers host the Pirates again at 5:50. Cubbies host the Rays at 6:40. White Sox will try again in Cleveland at 5:10. In the NHL, the Blackhawks lost to the Calgary Flames 5-2. They're off tonight. They play the Arizona Coyotes tomorrow night. And in the NBA, the Bucks will host the Chicago Bulls in Game 2 of their first-round playoff game on Wednesday at 8:30. The Bucks are up in that series 1-0. Now the forecast details from the National Weather Service. Today, partly sunny and high of 49. Tomorrow, messy, cloudy and windy. Rain likely Wednesday afternoon. A high of 53. Winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. Some gusts up to 35 miles per hour. That front will move through, and then Thursday will be sunny and pleasant, a high of 67. Here are the numbers right now. Still a cloudy sky, wind northwest at 8, 38 degrees Kenosha, 37 in Racine, 36 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is up shortly.
On today's morning show, we're going to be talking about the complex and really fascinating topic of retirement and how retirement can offer up all kinds of intriguing opportunities as well as plenty of challenges. And of course, there's a staggering array of possibilities when it comes to retirement. And sometimes retirement is something that is, in a sense, thrust upon us prematurely. Not at all according to the timetable or script that we may have long devised and expected to play out according to our own wishes. And of course, certainly this time of COVID-19 has, among other things, thrust quite a number of people into unanticipated retirement. And of course, plenty have also opted of their own free will for retirement earlier than perhaps they once intended for any number of different reasons. To help us sort out all of this is my morning show guest, Don Herzler. He bills himself as an adventure and landscape photographer, gallery co-owner, retired insurance company CEO, and an author several times over, but most recently, the author of a new book called Suddenly Retired, A Roadmap to What Comes Next. And a second subtitle that we see on the cover is Transforming What's Next into Your Next Big Thing. The book is published by Kuwabe Publishing. And Don Herzler joins us from faraway Hawaii to talk about his newest book. Don Herzler, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, good morning and aloha to you.
Nice to be talking to you. We were talking about how the weather here is probably drastically different from what it is in Hawaii, especially with a cold, rainy April upon us. You were telling me before we went on the air that you actually lived for some time not too far from here, down to the south of us in Barrington, Illinois. Before we get into the book itself, maybe you could give kind of a sketch of the kind of complicated arc of your professional and personal life. I think that will be helpful context then for digging into some specifics with the book.
Great, be happy to. First of all, you summarized the scenario that we're going to talk about perfectly, so thank you for that. You know, I had the traditional career. My dad had the traditional career and worked for, goodness knows, I think almost 50 years. I worked for 41 or two in corporate America. Started at the very bottom. You couldn't have found a lower spot to start than I had, and worked my way up to CEO. And at age 61, after moving, I think, 14 times, something like that, my wife and I decided to retire, and we retired to Hawaii because we're beach people, and her grandparents had lived here their whole life. So we came over here. We had to completely reimagine what our life was going to be. And it was a daunting experience, not easy in any way, shape, or form. We had to really think through what it was that we wanted to do and how that might fit in with Hawaii, or if it wouldn't fit in with Hawaii, where else would we live? So that's kind of what we did, and that's what the book is based on.
I want you to describe to our listeners an incredible scenario that you set out for us. That is where you and your wife were in November of 2019. In some respects of any place on earth, this is probably the last place you would have chosen to be had you known what was ahead. Explain where you were in November of 2019 and what ensued from there.
Well, we've traveled to 105 countries, my wife and I, and we do photography, so we love doing that all over the world. I've never been to China. Guess what country we chose for November of 19? China. And right toward the end of that trip, which was a lengthy trip, we went all over China. We ended up in Wuhan. And so when we arrived, we got off the Yangtze River, and we were headed into Wuhan. And the next morning, I think it was, they said, not going to do Wuhan. And so where are we going to go? Well, we're going to the airport. And I said, why? Just kind of get in the car and we're going to the airport. And so we went to the airport and they sent us to Shanghai. No explanation whatsoever. When we got to the airport, there were people in hazmat at the airport. There was a big machine that you walked under and you could tell that it was reading your temperature. There was a doctor and a nurse standing next to it in hazmat. And I said to my wife, I used to be on the board of directors of American Nuclear Insurers. And I said to my wife, I think there's been a nuclear leak or something horrible. I mean, this is scary. We got to Shanghai, nothing said. We were there 4 or 5 days. We got to Korea. And by then, China had let the world know that they really had a big problem. And so when we got to Korea, there was a matter of a health check for us to make sure that we were okay. A very scary time, no communication at all by the Chinese folks. However, I will say that they did get us out of there in a quick hurry, and I'm very thankful for that.
Right. So you, I think, very rightly described this period well as a scary, confusing, isolating, depressing, costly, and disruptive time and of course for millions of people throughout the world, a deadly time as well, and a time in which the way we work and the way we play, the way we travel, the way we look at all kinds of basic matters of life have been dramatically changed, and some of these changes very likely are going to be with us for a long time to come. Maybe you could just say a quick word about what this time of COVID has been like for you and others living in Hawaii. How did the 50th State of the Union weather the worst days of this pandemic?
Devastating. Absolutely devastating. And I know I'm not saying that for sympathy, because I know probably everybody who is listening could say the same thing. But we are a resort community. We live on tourism. That we don't have industry here. We have tourism. And tourism went on a complete shutdown. And by that, I'll give you an example. I own a photo gallery along with a partner and my wife. And it's a thriving business. 45% of our business comes from Canadians who like to come to Hawaii and spend part of the winter. For 2 years, we didn't see anybody from Canada. No one. We had rules in place about traveling inter-island or to the mainland that restricted us to here. We couldn't go to the beach. Now, we could go to the beach, but you couldn't linger on the beach. You had to get in the water, go surfing, go snorkeling, whatever you're going to do, get out and go home. And of course, we were isolated from one another and the like. It was very restrictive here. I don't know how it was in Wisconsin, but it was very, very restrictive here. And maybe because of that, we had some decent results on keeping the COVID numbers down. But the businesses, they went out left and right. Our business was founded on never having any debt and always having 6 months rent in the bank. And thank goodness, because it helped us to survive where others did not.
Hmm. I know that one thing that you freely include in your Fuller biography is that you are, among many other things, a cancer survivor. I wonder to what extent that contributed to your own sense of personal vulnerability when it came to the threat of COVID.
Well, I'm 75 years old, and my wife is 73, or I think she claims 64, but she's actually around 73. But anyway, we know. I mean, I made my whole living based on odds and data. And there was no choice for us. We knew we were in one of those highest levels of vulnerability, and we took it dead seriously. And we took, we got the shots, and we you know, did everything we needed to. We only got caught one time. We were coming back from Mexico last summer, and it turned out that the lady directly next to us on the plane had active COVID, was kind of coughing in my wife's face a long part of the deal. She had to be helped off the plane. And so we had to do a 2-week quarantine based on that, but we didn't get it. And so we've been very, very fortunate, but yeah, we took it dead seriously.
Right. Probably is helpful that you are, among many other things, also a member of the Chapman University Athletic Hall of Fame. And as someone who has been very healthy, that background and robust health has probably helped you weather this as well as you have. We're glad that you are healthy and able to share with the world this really interesting book. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Don Herzler about a book he has just written called Suddenly Retired, A Roadmap to What Comes Next. So as I touched on in the introduction, and you certainly more than touch on this in your book, this is a time in which many people have had their professional lives upended. And in many cases, people have either found themselves retired against their wishes or have chosen retirement earlier than they might have first anticipated. Have you had a chance to do much of an examination of just how widespread this is, and also if this is something that we are seeing all around the world, or is this more specifically an American phenomenon?
Well, we're seeing it all around the world. My book's only been out for a few days now. I mean, I think 5 days or something like that. It's already sold in 11 countries. So it is a worldwide experience that we're going through. And I have experienced it up close and personal with our own employees and with our friends. We have young friends, I'm happy to say. We have old friends. Everybody's been touched by it. So it's a subject that I felt would be needed to be addressed, and I'm glad I did. And I'm getting feedback from people who've read the book who said, you know, we kind of needed these ideas because this jumped on us in a hurry.
One of the tricks, I think, trickiest challenges in writing a book about retirement is how different retirement can look depending on who you are and what life has been like. I mean, that, for instance, somebody who is a retired CEO who's been president of a couple of companies and so on, probably is looking at retirement very different than somebody who has lived a life very different from that and who comes to the doorstep of retirement with not nearly the same sorts of resources and so on. I appreciate that your book, unlike a lot of others that are written about this topic, to some extent acknowledges that not everybody approaching retirement can even dream about retiring to Hawaii and traveling the world and so on. I think you are very aware of the fact that retirement is a very, very different thing for others. Just how much of a challenge was that for you in crafting this book to think, in a sense, more comprehensively than writing a book about retirement for what, in a sense, would be your own peers?
I have to tell you that I thought about it tremendously because the Big Island of Hawaii is a poor island. We are not a wealthy island. Most of my friends here are challenged economically, and share their experience with me, and you can see it in their daily life. So that was on me, and I knew I was going to have to make some information available for those folks. I think I have a chapter called "What If Your Nested Egg Looks Like an Empty Nest," and your retirement nest egg. And so today on Amazon, I got blasted. I mean, blasted by somebody who said, "Oh, you folks who are, you know, retired CEOs and everything, you got the world made and don't worry about it." I don't think he read the whole book or he would have found some interesting information in it for him. But I do understand his frustration and anger and concern. And I really do wish he'd gone back and read the book because he would have found some help in it. Yeah. Not everybody gets to travel and own a good camera and do what they want in retirement. I completely get that.
So I wonder if we could just talk for a moment about this whole notion of retirement being thrust upon someone. I mean, when a company goes out of business or drastically downsizes or one's position is eliminated or for whatever reason one suddenly is against one's wishes, retired, versus someone who is deciding, because of all of these changes around them, decides to leave the workforce. And of course, we've heard plenty about how many people have elected to do that. What do you think are the most significant differences, if there are significant differences, in terms of unwanted retirement, so to speak, versus retirement that one has chosen?
I think the most significant, you know, we at the base level, we seek survival. You know, we human beings seek survival. Somebody pulls your economic rug out from underneath you, and you don't go into saying, "What's the best retirement that I can possibly have?" You go, "How am I going to feed myself and stay in this apartment another month? My goodness, and everything around me is shut down. What am I going to do?" So I think panic is the first thing. And I think it was in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, where it said the first rule of the universe is don't panic. And so that's one of the things I concentrate on the book, is to say, yeah, this is upending and this is rattling and this can get at you at an emotional and anxious level. But it's time to not panic. It's time to take a deep breath, float on your back as we do in the ocean when we get in trouble, and think your way through this and maybe get some help, get some emotional help, get some retirement or business help. You don't have to do this alone.
You do have a bit of basic advice in that you really plead with people, do not retire to poverty. That is, I think the heart of your advice is for somebody who perhaps is feeling tempted to retire, but really does not necessarily have the resources to do so comfortably, you really encourage them to, if they can, to continue working maybe a couple more years at least, or whatever it would take in order to build up those resources and to set themselves up for a very different kind of retirement than might otherwise be the case. Is that a fair summation of your advice?
I am so thrilled that you brought that up, because I was afraid maybe I buried that, and I certainly did not mean to. I meant to headline it. Do what you need to do to be economically viable in retirement. And if that means you're not looking forward to going back in the office at all, 25-year-old boss, and drive an hour each way to work, I understand that completely. But if you don't have the money put away for a decent retirement, go back, put your nose to the grindstone, do two or three more years, and put yourself in a much better spot for retirement. I have a close relative, who was president of a company, and he retired quite early because he got upset with the business situation and his partners, and he just left. And guess what? He ended up in a very low-end, low-paying job that he worked until he was 80. Had he worked one more year, had he found a way to kind of bury his pride a little bit and work one more year, he'd have never had to work in retirement. And that's what I'm kind of pointing out. Don't just throw away your career.
Mm. And resist the urge to do so abruptly without really checking out thoroughly your own situation. I suppose what we're talking about is look at the consequences of this drastic action that you are maybe tempted to do.
Yeah, that old sage advice about not burning bridges is really, really important right now, particularly with social media being what it is. It'll live with you forever. And if you torch your boss and the company and blah, 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 and then 2 years down the road find you need a job, guess where that boss might be? Or guess who might have bought that company? And don't mess up the rest of your life with a tantrum at the end. Even if you really, really want to do it, go tell it to a wall somewhere.
The fifth chapter of your book is emblazoned with an interesting title: A First Step. Let's deal with actual facts.
Wow.
An interesting choice of words, actual facts. I mean, I think probably at least in one sense of the word, a fact is a fact, and all true facts are actual facts. But you're clearly pointing to something that, in a sense, might distract us from what is most important, or that might, in a sense, maybe mislead us. What do you mean by actual facts, and what are the actual facts that people need to be paying attention to at this point in their lives?
Well, I can go, I'll be succinct on this rather than lengthy. My editor had a problem with that as well, because I think English construction-wise there is probably not the best. But here's what I mean. People ignore some facts. So facts are facts. We all know that. But in retirement planning or any kind of planning, I've noticed even in business planning, a lot of people ignore facts because they don't want to deal with them. And I'll give you the best example. When people are planning for their retirement, if they don't plan to put a new roof on their house 20 years down the road, if they don't plan to replace that car that's got 80,000 miles somewhere in the next 2 or 3 years, if they don't plan for that unexpected hospital visit or the like, they don't have a plan. They have a made-up dream plan. And so what I try to get to is to say, put them all on the table. The inconvenient facts and the other facts, put them all on there and deal with them and have a backup plan. I think I mentioned that in my first few months of retirement, it was 2008, and I lost a fortune in the stock market, a fortune. And guess what? I had a plan for that. And that plan was put into play, and it served me well. So put everything on the table. That's what I'm saying.
Right. I think that's a really good point. And when you're talking about things like a new roof on your head, on your house, or replacing your automobile and so on, You say you call collectively these kind of items retirement ruiners. And I'm sure it is very tempting for people to look ahead to their retirement with those kind of possibilities, which are maybe in some cases inevitabilities, off to the side, out of sight, out of mind. I think what you're exhorting people to do is to resist the urge to do that.
And the number one call I get or email that I get, and I truly get these. I'm not making this up. I truly get these, usually from relatives and close friends, is, Don, you're not going to believe what happened. I lost a tooth. I'm going to have an implant. Who's got $3,000 for that? Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, that happens. And so I'm trying to get people to be steely-eyed about it. And grit down and be conservative too, and put a little extra in there to say, if something goes wrong, if Katrina rolls through, whatever it happens to be, I'm prepared.
You do say that if and when one is on the brink of retirement and then sort of realizes, probably in some cases after the fact or a little too late, that there is going to be a shortfall, that is, life is about to change drastically, maybe more drastically than one anticipated. There are several really basic things to think about that can make the difference, including this reality of continuing to work but part-time in retirement. And I like your advice that one should not look at that as a failure, but that perhaps a very wise step that also can yield all kinds of benefits and pleasures.
I've got buddies of mine who were the most successful people that I've ever met, and they had some temporary financial thing going on, and they are working at the golf course as a starter, or they're working at Walmart as a greeter. Who cares? I mean, you're retired, and if you want to do something and you need to earn some money, in some cases, your options might be limited. And so, you know, go out and do what you have to do. It's not anything that your pride should get in the way of. Have at it. But I get into the other aspects too, which is to say, you know, you can look at the other end of the barrel and say, what expenses can I cut? And I know I had never looked down that end of the barrel when I was working because I was making good money. But when the money stopped, I looked down the end of that barrel and I went, oh my goodness, look how much my golf club thing is costing me a month. And look how much this subscription is. Subscriptions are insidious because they really add up. And on and on. I went through it, again, steely-eyed, and said, what can I cut back? And man, did I cut back.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Don Herzler about his new book, Suddenly Retired, A Roadmap to What Comes Next. So one really intriguing moment well into the book is when you spell out in one chapter the upside of retirement and in the very next chapter the downside of retirement, which, you know, right there in a nutshell kind of reinforces the idea that retirement, while in and of itself might seem like a simple matter, is in fact opening the door to, in many cases, a very complicated and challenging situation. So we want to entice people to seek out your book, of course, but just summarize, if you would, this duality of retirement, that there is an upside and a downside.
I'm not going to have to spend much time on the upside, because anybody who retires and has adequate finances is going to just find that it is heaven on earth. I've never ever had so much fun in my life. I've never been so creative or able to do things or meet new people, meet new friends, go to events. It's spectacular. It's the best time of my life. And I loved my working career. Absolutely loved it. This is better. So I'm not going to spend much time on that. They'll find that part of it. The downside, and there's several. One is, and I don't want to get, you know, too far into the weeds on this, but aging. Let me tell you, I'm 75. Aging is not as fun as I suspected it might be. And I didn't suspect it was going to be any fun. My mom told me that when she was 99. She said, you know, this is not as good as I thought it was going to be. So aging is, along with that comes health issues and the loss of some friends who die. and all of that. So that, you know, loss of strength and eyesight and hearing, and, you know, you can't cover that up. That's gonna happen. Another downside of it is that, let's say you take up writing books or you take up photography and you turn around one day and you're successful at it, which, by the way, I want to say might happen. And if it does, all of a sudden you find you almost got a job again. So that's a downside of it. And then a third thing that I would mention is that the whole world looks to you to volunteer. And because you've got the time and maybe you've got the money and you've certainly got the expertise. And wouldn't it be nice if you came and volunteered? I'm very clear about this in the book, and it doesn't make me look good. I am pretty selfish about that. I volunteered to a fare-thee-well during my whole life up until retirement, and now I don't volunteer. I do a few things, beach cleanup and a few things, but I'm not even on the homeowners association. So I don't volunteer. I'm happy to send people a check because I can. And they seem to like that, but I'm not going to send them my time because my time is short.
Understood. And of course, what you're saying is this is your choice, a choice that you've made, and you think it's the right choice for you. And of course, for many, many other people, the right choice might be different, might be the complete opposite of what you just outlined. I think what you're really saying more than anything is people need to make good choices for their own lives. And what it is that is going to make life happy and meaningful for them. I appreciated a point made in the next chapter, which is called All We Have to Fear is Fear Itself, in which you address a question that I'm sure is on the minds of many who are contemplating retirement, but very fearful that it might not be the right thing to do or might not be the right time to do it. Explain kind of the heart of your reassurance for people who might really be fearful about this.
Well, my reassurance kind of went like this. First of all, going back to your prior point, your choice or the reader's choice or the listener's choice, it's their choice and I respect it and honor it. And I'm not in any way, shape or form saying, hey, come move to Hawaii. In fact, I think that's probably a pretty bad idea for most people. Because we have our downsides here too, believe it or not. But I think that if people are afraid of what's going to happen, guess what? If it's going in a way that you don't like, you can change it. And that includes my wife and I moved here. We gave away 75% of our belongings. We took the other 25%. We shipped them here. We came here. Fortunately for us, we love it. We're going to stay here till we're gone. However, if we didn't, we could take that 25% of our belongings and put it back in another container and move to Kenosha. Nothing is final. It's you can't make a mistake in retirement because nobody cares, and it's all up to you. So all I keep saying is keep navigating towards happiness. If you're not happy in your retirement, if you're not happy with your surroundings, move or go someplace else or try something different. And if that means you then have to maybe go back to work for a year or two because you've burned up some of your finances in your first mistake, who cares? Go do it. So nothing's final. Mm.
And of course, you're giving that advice at a point in time when there are plenty of employers who are desperate for employees. And probably once upon a time, to reassure somebody who is 60 or 62 or 64 that if you need to go back to work, no problem, go back to work. There've probably been points in our country's even relatively recent history where that might not actually be quite such a simple matter. And of course, now, and it's for the foreseeable future, for anybody who finds that they really need to and want to return to the workforce, there are all kinds of places that will be thrilled to have them.
And if there aren't where you live, then move. You know, that might be uncomfortable too, but it might just be temporary. But here in Hawaii, we just can't hire people. We'd love to. There's many of our businesses here have not reopened or have reopened with restricted hours because they cannot find the employees. And I'm talking about all the way including businesses like Starbucks. I walked over to Starbucks the other day, and they were closed at 3 in the afternoon. What Starbucks closes at 3 in the afternoon? They closed because they didn't have enough people to run the shop. So, yeah, there's plenty of opportunity out there, without a doubt.
So when it comes to the matter of thinking things through, and indeed one of your chapters is titled very simply, A Way to Think It Through, what is your advice for people when it comes to kind of sorting out exactly what their wishes are, exactly what the options are, the possibilities, and so on? I mean, for somebody who is just intimidated by that in and of itself, just the exploration of this, the contemplation of this, what is your advice for them in terms of how to do this, in a sense, most effectively?
Well, I made it very simple, because any reader of any of my books will note very quickly that I'm not a brain surgeon. They're dealing with a guy who, I graduated magna cum laude from college. I was lucky to get out. So it's simple advice, but I think it's probably good advice. So the first piece is, don't accept your current situation for what you're going to do in retirement. I encourage people to explore the options and possibilities of making retirement your dream life. Just explore them. You don't have to take them. Maybe you can't take them, but explore them. If you don't explore them, nothing's ever going to happen. When are you ever going to get a chance to have your dreams come true? So that's kind of the first piece of advice. Then I take them through a simple process. I say, name 10 things you want to do in retirement. 10, and it could be 6, it could be 15, whatever. Name 10 things you want to do in retirement. I'll give you an example. My wife and I wanted to be able, after living 24 years in the Midwest, to be able to go outside 365 days a year in a t-shirt and swim shorts and go for a walk. I mean, that was important to us. And we'd not been able to do that. We weren't raised cold weather people. We were raised in California. And so it was hard on us, and we wanted to be somewhere where we could do that. We wanted to swim every day of our life in a tropically warm ocean. Boy, that starts to narrow down where you're going to live. We wanted, at the end of the day, to live in America. And that comes from our travels. We had thought about a place in France that we love. We'd thought about St. Croix and the Virgin Islands and a couple of other foreign sites that we really love. But when it came right down to it, we wanted to be in America for many, many reasons. And so it was 10 things like that. Now we have those things. The other things were 10 things we didn't want to do. And I'll give you the most controversial and selfish one. We didn't want to be the babysitter for all the grandchildren. We love our grandchildren. I just didn't want to be their driver. And selfish as that is, some people love to do that. I don't. And so that was one of the things that we wanted. And so once we had the things we wanted to do and the things that we didn't want to do, it really helped us kind of narrow down where it was we were going to live and what we were going to do.
I thought it was interesting in the chapter where you talk about thinking about and ultimately choosing where you are going to retire to. You list out, in a sense, 8 basic options. And one of the reasons I think you do it that way is because you want people to understand that a lot of people will only think about maybe 2 options or 3, possibly 4. But in fact, there are all kinds of different possibilities. I mean, at least for a lot of people. Again, we should underscore that some people reach retirement and their options and opportunities are sometimes severely limited, and sometimes severely limited by life circumstances. So fully acknowledging that, the fact is, for many people, when they get to retirement, they fail to think about some of the possibilities when it comes to where they could retire. Explain to the listeners what I'm talking about here, what you want people to be contemplating with this very basic and really important decision.
I wrote 2 business books where in both books I said, if you really want to go to the top of a corporation, you got to be willing to move. And it was the hatred that I received from those statements was palatable. I mean, I got letters, I got phone calls. How dare you say that? Well, you know, I say that because if you're, you know, working for a New York City-based company and you're not willing to move to New York City, you're probably not going to be chairman. It's just probably not going to happen. And so that's kind of the lead up to this. I think a lot of people that I know of my age that I worked with and the like, let's say they lived in the Midwest because I worked in the Midwest for so long, their options are, do I stay here in Barrington, Illinois? Or here's the other option. Do I stay here part of the year and part of the year in Florida? And a lot of them take that one. That's the end of the options that are considered. And I've experienced that over and over again. But I've said, you know, there's eight options or more, and explore all of them. And you don't have to, you know, but you don't have to do anything with any of them, but at least consider them. And for me to consider living on an island 2,700 miles away from a mainland was pretty crazy. But once I looked at it, I said, you know, I think we can do this, and we'll at least try it.
Yeah. I think you should explain to our listeners the decision that you and your wife made early on in retirement, which was really interesting. It involved the choice you had made to move to the big island of Hawaii, but acknowledging that you were a little bit fearful when it came to the matter of healthcare. Explain what you and your wife decided to do about that in the first year of your retirement.
If you can find any place that meets exactly all 10 of the things you want to do in retirement, good luck. I mean, you are a miracle person. We certainly could not. And the big one that stood out for us was, I said, we wanted to live in a place, I've had cancer, we want to live in a place that has absolutely excellent medical care. God, I love Kona. I love it so much, I can't tell you. We do not have excellent medical care. If we want Mexico, if we want to get excellent medical care, we go to Oahu, which you can get excellent care there, or we go to the mainland, you know, Mayo Clinic or whatever it takes. So I made arrangements for us to have emergency services to get us off the island and the means to get taken care of. I lined up specialists on Oahu that we, you know, see on a regular basis and worked my way around it. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. I would much rather have the Mayo Clinic three blocks from me than what we have here, but it's a workaround and we've made the best of it.
Very good. So you sort out all kinds of matters related to the finances of retirement. I don't think we'll take the time to explore too much of that here in this conversation, but just suffice to say that you do thorough exploration of quite a lot of that. And again, I think as you write about this, you very much acknowledge the reality that this point in one's life, there are all kinds of places where you can be, from being surrounded by affluence to living paycheck to paycheck. And so this can look very, very different. And I appreciate the thorough way in which you explore this from so many different angles. I also like that there's a chapter in the book devoted to the matter of friendship and the fact that friendship, one of the most fundamental aspects of human life, can feel very different during retirement and in terms of the friendships that survive and the friendships that fade away in retirement. We can kind of do something about that. What would you have people think about in terms of the friendships in their lives as they are beginning retirement?
I think the beginning one is they're making no new old friends. So I cling on to my old friends. My best friend in life is coming to visit in 2 weeks. My wife's best friend is coming to visit next week. We hang on to our old friends for as long as we can. And love them through better or worse, because they've all gone through better or worse, as have we. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is if you're adding no new friends, you're going to whittle down the list to where it's, you know, you and the wall talking to each other, because people die, you know, as they get older. And so, or they go out of communication in some cases. So we have taken every opportunity to add new friends where we can, and they are the most diverse group of people that we've ever been associated with, economically, by race, by religion, by what they do. We have people that who have belief systems that we think are just insane, and we love them. We get along great with them. They provide a lot of pleasure for us in our lives. So broaden the base, make sure it's got young people in it, and hold on to the old ones.
This is the last question, and again, we've just touched on the surface of what is in this book. There is a chapter that the career heading of which surprised me. It was these three words: declare career victory. Explain why this is important for somebody to do on the brink of retirement.
Of all the things I've written about in any of my books, this is the one that I've gotten the best feedback on, because it is a problem for so many of us. And we don't all get to end our career at some lavish party with people patting us on the back. That's not how it works out most of the time. Most of the time, it's because your company got bought, or you got old and you had to leave, or whatever. And so people sit around, I think, sometimes waiting for that magic moment. When's that magic moment for us to retire? Well, the magic moment is when you want to retire. And what I say in the deal is, when you want to retire and you've kind of lined it up so that that's possible, exit in a normalized manner, but do so with a smile on your face and with thanking everybody all around. And if you have to lie to yourself about the fact of how you're leaving, go right ahead. Read any of my books. And if you know me really well, you'd know that I've lied to myself some about how I left. And I left in a pretty good way, actually, but it wasn't the perfect way by any stretch of the imagination. And so here's what I decided. I'm not carrying my little disputes with my career and with some ex-boss and with some institution with me. It's too heavy a load. So I just declared victory and thanked everybody, whether they deserved it or not, although I think almost all did, and moved on to the next part of my life with a smile on my face. I think that's good advice for anybody.
Well, your book is chock full of great advice, and your book also includes some worksheets that can help people as they literally work through some of these questions and issues and choices that might be part of their retirement. The book, again, is titled Suddenly Retired, A Roadmap to What Comes Next. And there's a beautiful cardinal on the cover, and I assume that's a photograph that you have taken.
I did, and that cardinal resides 10 feet from me here in a tree waiting for me to come out and give him a peanut after we're done.
Very, very good. The book is published by Kuabe Publishing, the author, Don Herzler. Don Herzler, I trust that there are plenty of people listening to this conversation who have benefited greatly, and they will benefit still more by seeking out your book and exploring all that we did not have time to talk about today. But in the meantime, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you stepping away from the lovely beach to have this conversation, and wish you well as your retirement continues. Thank you again.
Aloha. Total pleasure. Thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, I'm very excited to be speaking with Tim Keeler, who is the music director for one of the finest vocal ensembles in the country, indeed the world, Chanticleer. Chanticleer is going to be performing a concert this Friday night at Carthage College. And tomorrow, you'll be hearing from Tim Keeler about the long history of this extraordinary group, and we'll be finding out a little bit about the musical background of its 12 talented members and the very intriguing concert that they're going to be presenting Friday night. And on Thursday's morning show, Dr. Deborah Ford, who is Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, look very
very much look forward to speaking with her and getting an update on all that is going on at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website.